Okay, folks, we're back here, the second half, interviewing Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst. So, yeah, Ray, we're talking about these wonderful neocons here that are now running our country, or should I say running it into the ground. Have you ever had the privilege of actually ever personally meeting up with any of these guys? Have you had any discourse with them? Or?
Well, let me see. The main ones, you know, I guess we have to exempt people like Powell. I used to see Powell every other morning when I was briefing his boss, the Secretary of Defense. I guess Powell doesn't really qualify as a neocon. Abrams, of course, Elliot Abrams, who's running our policy toward the Middle East out of the White House, he's a convicted felon for what he did during Iraq-Contra. And I knew of him at that time, and I knew people who dealt with him all the time, but I didn't know him personally. So I guess I've escaped the privilege, as you put it, of knowing any of these folks personally.
Lucky you. Actually, we've got quite a few of the Iran-Contra felons in this administration, don't we?
We sure do, yeah.
At least serving advisory positions. It's he knows how to pick them, doesn't he?
I'm sorry, yeah, he sure does. Yeah, he's got an unfailing knack for picking people like Brownie there at FEMA, you know, heck of a job, yeah. Brownie, and so forth.
Right, yeah.
You know, in a general sense, Charlie, I've been thinking about this, and, you know, when this fellow Cooney, Philip Cooney, who was the young Republican functionary who was actually changing the reports of the chief NASA scientist on global warming, you know, he's sitting in the White House changing the, you know, putting in a knot here or, you know, changing the text of what a problem this is. And when he was brought up before Waxman's committee and they asked him, what gives here? He said, well, look, I'm a political appointee and I owe first and foremost my allegiance to the President of the United States, George W. Bush. And my job is to assure that the agency with which I'm working, in this case NASA, that its reports conform with administration policy. And administration policy is against global warming. And so if some scientist comes to a different conclusion, I change the words. Hello?
Now, Force the square peg into the round hole.
Now, if you extrapolate from that and see what's happened at Justice, and, you know, I'm sad to say, to see what happened at CIA. The policy was to do a war. And what George Tenet, to his disgrace, cooperated in was cooking the intelligence so that a war could be, quote, justified, end quote, and there is no excuse for that. He should be put behind bars.
And, of course, Blair and his party did the same thing. Bush told Blair in the Downing Street memo, fix the intelligence around that premise. We're going in next year.
Yeah, another thing that the mainstream media in this country completely ignored, there was documentary evidence from the chief of British intelligence reporting to Tony Blair, look, I just talked with George Tenet, and this is what he said. Even though there's not much intelligence, the intelligence is being, quote, fixed, end quote, around the policy, and we're going to go and take Saddam out. You know, it couldn't be clearer than that. I mean, this is the kind of documentary evidence that lawyers and analysts positively lust after, and there it was. And it didn't find its way into the New York Times or the Washington Post until we bloggers really forced them to do it after 6 or 7 weeks.
Do you still have any ties, any connections with people currently working in the CIA? And if so, what's their feedback on this? Are they disgusted with what's happening, or are they just kind of out of fear going along? Or?
Well, Charlie, it really depends on whom you're talking to. We're really talking about two different sets of individuals now. And let me just turn that thing off. Sorry about that.
Hey, well, we got another break coming in.
Oh, okay. Good.
We'll pick up from there when we get back. Stick with us, folks.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. The J. Michael Stevens Group is shipping a lot of storable food. It's smart that you're getting going at your food supplies. 1 week after the report came out that the world had eaten more food than it produced last year, the country turned into a deep freeze, wiping out a huge part of the new crop. An example? In 24 hours, Clementine oranges doubled in price. If you intend to start or finish your supply, call immediately. When you call, tell them how many adults and how many years of food you need. When there are shortages, missing items will be substituted, maintaining the quantity of food necessary. Money is not the problem. Availability is. Be careful. When food supplies get short, with no future, many retailers ship real trash to supply you. For safe food you can trust, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
People who use Cartivite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartivite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartivite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Welcome back, folks. You're on True Church Radio. This is your host, Charlie Giuliani. And we've got Ray McGovern here joining us again for the next hour. Before the break, Ray, we were talking about varying opinions in the CIA about the current administration.
Yeah, I guess I was starting to say that one has to put the CIA performance in some perspective. And let me put it this way, that when George Tenet was told by the White House that they wanted to get Congress to approve this unnecessary war, and that the Senate was insisting that a national intelligence estimate be written on weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Now, for your listeners, a national intelligence estimate is the most important thing that the CIA or the intelligence community does, and it's always done before a major political or military move is made. So, Tenet had been avoiding this because the honest answer would have been, does he have weapons of mass destruction? Well, we know that 90% of them were destroyed after the first Gulf War. We've never seen the other 10%. They're carried on a list, but, you know, it's been a lot of time here, and we haven't seen them. And that was not a satisfactory answer. That's not how the administration could sell a war to Congress. So they came up with these cockamamie stories about Iraq seeking uranium in Niger, aluminum tubes that appeared that were really for mortars, but they said were for gaseous diffusion plants, and other things like that. And so George Tenet was told, okay, write this all up, because that's what we need to persuade Congress. And if you need any guide, just look at what Dick Cheney said on the 26th of August, 2002, because it's all there. They're near to getting a nuclear weapon. They got all kinds of other chemical and biological. You just read that and make an estimate like it. Now, to his great disgrace, he went back to headquarters, and he convened his top managers, and he said, we've got to do an estimate now. We can't avoid anymore. And two things, two stipulations. One is it's got to be done within 3 weeks, because Karl Rove wants to force a vote on this before the midterm elections. Early October would be good enough to get that vote. And it has to come out the way Dick Cheney said it was in his speech of 26 August. Now, if that had happened during my tenure in the CIA, we would have said, George, you're a real card. You're not serious, George. And if he said he was serious, I'm convinced that most of us would have gotten up out of our seats and walked out the door saying, sorry, George, we don't do that kind of thing. We're supposed to tell it straight. Now, why didn't that happen? Well, because starting under Bill Casey, Ronald Reagan's head of the CIA and the intelligence community, there was a corruption of the analysis in CIA, first and foremost because Casey thought there were Soviets all over the world and that the Soviet regime could never change, and so he missed the whole Gorbachev thing and missed the whole devolution of the Soviet Union. And the people who got promoted in those years were the people who, like Colin Powell, would say, yes, sir, you say the Soviet Union will persist forever? Oh, sure as hell will. You see two Soviets under those rocks? Well, whoops, we see three, you know, this kind of thing. And so I kid you not, I guess is the wrong word, but what George Tenet was the beneficiary of was a whole coterie of malleable managers that bubbled up into managerial positions, not because they were smart or because they were professional, but because they could always sniff that wind blowing from the Pentagon and the White House and trim their analytical sails accordingly. And so it was right. A piece of cake, and they came up with the very worst national intelligence estimate ever produced by the intelligence community in this country.
Well, I remember the same thing happened in January 2003, leading up to the Iraq War. Bush, of course, was trying to make the case, the administration itself was trying to make the case that there was a connection between Saddam and Iraq and 9/11. So they issued an orange alert, and then after they issued it, this was in the Washington Post, Washington Times, Bush sent memos out to the FBI and the CIA asking them to, you know, to come up with something, anything to justify this. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, it would be unbelievable, except for this crowd, you know. It's really very strange. You know, if you look back at that, I keep referring to that one speech that Cheney made on the 26th of August, 2002, because it's, you know, it is the smoking gun. See, what happened was they had decided in the spring, really, to have this war. They told the British, as we know, on July 20th, when the head of British intelligence conferred with George Tenet, yeah, there's going to be a war for regime change, and we'll justify it by the conjunction of weapons of mass destruction and terrorism. Translation from the British, we're going to say that he has all manner of weapons of mass destruction, and we're going to say that he's likely to give those to terrorists. And that's how we'll justify this thing, okay? Well, that's the way that's the way it was framed. Now, who framed it? Well, even before they came back from vacation in late August, you know, they came back in Labor Day, of course, in 2002, Dick Cheney got up before in Nashville before the Veterans of Foreign Wars, and he said, number one, it is without doubt that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, and they're very close to getting a nuclear weapon. Some of us think it's about a year away. UN inspections aren't worth a darn. And by the way, we think the Israelis did a really good job on Osirak back there in 1981, and that's the kind of thing you need to do. Okay, so he's a big devotee of preemption, and here is Dick Cheney doing his own little preemptive move to set the stage by the time they come back. Those were the terms of reference, not only for the National Intelligence Estimate that I mentioned, but for all the stuff that went on between then, late August, and October 10 and 11, when mushroom clouds were adduced as the specter that would require us to go to war with Iraq. And on the 10th and the 11th of October, your congressmen, senators, and mine, most of them at least, voted to allow a completely unnecessary war with the results that we know about now. The point is, Cheney did this deed, and we know now from Tenet's book that Cheney didn't even ask the intelligence community about this. And Tenet says he highly doubts that Cheney even told the president before he made this speech. So who's running this place? Dick Cheney is. And that's, yeah. There's no better proof than that.
It doesn't say too much, does it, about the intelligence and or scruples of those who give any support anymore to this administration. Thank God they're in a shrinking small number, but...
A lot of them don't know this stuff. That's the problem. You know, one of the things that happened after this, Charlie, was that General Zinni, okay, General Tony Zinni, who is head of CENTCOM, you know, the command that has purview over the Middle East, he had retired 2 years previous, but he was still reading all the intelligence. He was doing that as a consultant for the Pentagon and the CIA. He's there in Nashville on the 26th of August, 2002. He's getting a big award from the Veterans of Foreign Wars, okay? He's sitting there, and he listens to Cheney, and he says to himself, and this is from Zinni's own words several months later, my God, what's going on here? I've seen all this intelligence. I've never had anybody tell me that they have weapons of mass destruction. Nuclear stuff? I've not seen a thing about nuclear stuff.
Right.
Zinni says that as he left that meeting, he said, my God, they've decided to do this war, and they don't know what the hell they're doing. And nothing's proved righter than that, has it?
They just go in with an agenda. Doesn't matter what reality is, what the facts say. They do what they want. It's scary that the so-called Democratic dominated Congress is rolling the
yeah.
carpet.
Yeah, but you know, even going back there, how many people know about that? This was in an obscure report about Zinni, and nobody made much of it. Certainly, it didn't find its way onto Fox, and so Americans just aren't fully informed. And it's the media, and of course, unless the media gets on its job, then the congressmen and senators. They can play these terrible games to which you just alluded.
It's just a big, terrible mess. What do you think the role or possible role might be in the current, obviously, for the most part, at least at the top levels, corrupted CIA? What role do you see them playing? I'm sure you're aware, you know, the Operation Mockingbird, they've done this in the past with Vietnam. Do you see them in addition to, you know, we probably don't even need CIA working with the media now to put propaganda when you've got such high concentration of control by corporations that, you know, contract with the Pentagon. But do you think the CIA is still operative in that department?
Well, you've got to really go back and see what the CIA is legally able to do. The way the legislation was written way back in 1947 after the war, the CIA was set up as Truman intended for two primary purposes. One, to have a central place where all the information on a given issue or country would be collected in that one inbox I referred to before, so that Pearl Harbor wouldn't happen again, where there were scattered little pieces and nobody centrally located to analyze them and say, well, where the heck is the Japanese fleet, that kind of thing. So it had to be central, and the second was not to put it under the State Department or the Pentagon, so that this could be a place that had no policy to defend, no policy agenda. Truman wanted to be able to go to the director and say, look, Mr. Director, or Ms. Director, hopefully in the future, I want it from you straight. You know, I don't care what the State Department, what the Pentagon says. I want to know what you and those two universities worth of specialists out there in the woods of Virginia, I want to know what you really think. Give it to me straight. Now, those were the two main objectives. And I have to say that I was very proud to work in that environment for almost the entire part of my career. There's another story, and we can get back to that, the other part of it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back after the break. We're part of fire.
Catholic priest calls on Catholics and Christians to resist an unjust attack against Iran. Father John Martinez, a Catholic priest, speaks out to declare the Catholic Church's true teaching, that it would be a mortal sin for Catholic soldiers to attack Iran. In a one-hour lecture, Father John Martinez warns about the Jewish plot to rule the world and to use the United States to ignite the flames of World War III by its satanic plan to unjustly attack Iran. He exposes that George Bush is Jewish and how Congress is controlled by the Jews. Father John Martinez gravely warns of nuclear weapons being used by the United States and the threat of the possible end of the world. For additional information on how you can help stop World War III, order Father John Martinez's CD entitled An Unjust Attack on Iran, available for $10 by Father John Martinez. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for the address.
World War III? Rising fuel prices? Financial collapse? Trucker strike? North American Union? Our world has become a very fragile place, and we need to be prudent and plan ahead. Don't wait for an impending crisis to become reality. Then it will be too late. Stoves and More wants to help give you freedom from the systems of the world. If the grid is down and fossil fuels are not available to you, how would you heat your home, cook your food, and heat your water? People, we need to be more independent and able to take care of ourselves in a natural disaster, political crisis, or financial crisis. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you the independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. With the right application, you'll be able to use these stoves all year long, not just during the winter months. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at stovesandmoreonline.com. Food, water, and a wood cook stove are keys to your survival in a crisis. Take action.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
And we're back on Truth Hurts Radio. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got Ray McGovern here as our guest. I got a statement here made by Harry Truman back in 1963. Apparently, the CIA at that point, at least at the highest levels, got out of hand, and it became something mutated from what he had intended to be. Here's what he said. The fellows in the CIA don't just report on wars and the like. They go out and make their own, and there's nobody to keep track of what they're up to. It's become a government all its own and all secret. They don't have to account to anybody. That's a very dangerous thing in a democracy, and it's got to be put a stop to. Interesting statement.
Yeah, that's. Thanks for that segue. That's exactly what I was going to get into. I think that was his Washington Post op-ed, was it not?
Yeah.
Well, so there's Truman himself, 1963. So let's see, my math is right. That's 16 years after the creation of this agency. So how did it become what Harry Truman describes it as, making their own policy and doing their own wars? Well, it's a sort of simple but very, very, very sad explanation. So what happened was right after World War II, there were the alumni and alumnae of this crackerjack unit called the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services. Now, to their great credit, they had worked miracles in the European and Far Eastern theater.
Not to interrupt, but my great uncle, his name was Apollo Valakis. He was the head of the Mediterranean operations for OSS.
All right.
And he would never discuss it.
Yeah, even to this day, probably. Yeah.
Well, he's dead now, but yeah. I mean, he would never talk about it anytime he brought it up.
Well, Bill Colby and some of the others were, you know, he flew into France, parachuted in there, and so forth. Anyhow, they had incredible achievements to their credit. And so here it is, 1946, 47, as the legislation is being written for this new agency called the CIA. And the question arises, what do we do with all these folks, you know? Can we just let them go back to their businesses or to their universities or to their law firms? Or do we need this capability? Now, this is a time when the Soviet Union is rolling over Eastern Europe and threatening the Balkans and Italy and France and everything else. So the question answered itself. We have to keep this capability. Then the next question, and this is the real sad part, where do we put it? And somebody says, well, we're creating a CIA. Let's put it there. And so into that legislation was written a key sentence which says that the Central Intelligence Agency director shall perform such other tasks and duties as the president and the National Security Council shall from time to time direct. One sentence, and it gives the president, who is head of the National Security Council, of course, the right to use the agency in any way he or she damn well pleases. And for the longest time, including 63, when Truman made his remarks, there was no check on it at all. And lately, of course, there are the congressional committees, but the recent ones have given a whole new meaning to oversight. You know, put on your blinders is what they've done. So what you need is effective control by the Congress. Even if you get real effective control, you can never be sure that all the secrets will be told you. And unless you're going to change, what you need to do is either elect the president who has some integrity and some honesty and some, you know, some basic decency, or change the legislation. Make something separate. Don't put it in to corrupt the intelligence analysis, for Pete's sake. How can you have one person, the head of the intelligence community, responsible both for running little private wars and for objectively assessing the prospects for success in such wars? Well, that's what Casey was put in position to do. He's running this little war in Nicaragua, and he'd be called onto the Hill, and they'd say, well, how's it going? What credibility does Casey have to address this? So
Homeland Security, it's even more out of control now. Everything basically is under one man's, you know, guidance, and
that's
better off when things... And, of course, I'm sure you know about the Church Committee, you know, Senator Church back in 1975. There was a lot of good that came out of that, you know, to prevent things like COINTELPRO.
Sure. That's what set up the congressional committees, you know, that kind of process. But, as I say, particularly when...
Now, though.
What's that?
I mean, all those provisions, they're gone now with Homeland Security. I mean, they've carte blanche. They can pretty much do what they want.
That's true. Yeah, the Homeland Security thing was a really, really... it was dumb from a bureaucracy point of view, but it was really insidious from a civil liberties point of view.
Yeah, it's like a modern Gestapo. I was going to ask you about, what do you think of Casey? I actually find him to have been probably the best CIA director in history, as far as I know. I mean, he seemed like he was a pretty decent, honest man.
William Casey?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'd have to give you my own opinion on that. I just alluded to this, what I call...
Not Casey, Colby.
Colby.
Colby. Good heavens, not Casey.
Take a deep breath here, Charlie.
yeah, sorry about that.
Colby was... I worked directly under Colby, so I know him real well. He was an honest man. He was a lawyer who had a devotion to the Constitution that wouldn't quit. Even when his boss, Henry Kissinger, told him to lie to the Congress, he said, sorry, Henry, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
So he revealed the family jewels, and he told the truth, and so he was fired by Kissinger. And that's the thing you have to be willing to do if you're a director. You have to be willing to be fired on principle.
Yeah. I got another question I want to ask you about him, but I'll wait till we get back from the break. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back with Ray McGovern.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the task force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
It's radio. And this is your host, Charlie Giuliani. We have Ray McGovern here as our guest, former CIA analyst. Yeah, before the break, Ray, we're talking about Colby. And good heavens, I meant to say Colby and not Casey. It's like black and white. I don't know how I got them two mixed up.
Reassuring, Charlie.
Yeah. But, you know, I've always been suspicious of his death. And maybe there was nothing there. But here's a guy who decides something his own wife said that was just very unusual. He never did. You know, it's after dark. He goes out on his boat. He left his meal, I guess, half eaten on the counter, left the light on. I guess the door wasn't even locked. For him to just up and go out for a boat ride like that was unprecedented. And, of course, he died. They found him floating down the river there near his home. Do you suspect anything foul there? Or?
Well, I know the conditions to be, as you described them, very, very unusual. I mean, he was a paramilitary guy, and he was an excellent canoer and so forth. So unless he had the heart attack that they say, I'm not quite sure whether there was an autopsy or not. Can you remember, Charlie?
I don't believe there was. That's
usually
the case with, you know, again, you have a conscience, and you tend to not live a full life, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully that's not what happened, but certainly looking around and about, I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, suspicious. You know, looking back over your years while in the CIA, would you say that you were, at the time, oblivious to things going on? Like the Vietnam War, obviously, you know, looking back, it's like, why were we there? Why did that drag on? What purpose did it serve the national interest? Mm-hmm. Were you so busy and just caught up in the whole fracas of it that you'd never really stopped to think about it? Or did you have any suspicions that something's not right here? Or?
No, we learned pretty early on that the thing was a feckless exercise. And the question was whether we could bring these smartest people in the world types, McNamara's whiz kids, into the real world. There were people that I worked with that literally came into Hanoi with Ho Chi Minh after World War II. You know, they pretty much carried him on their shoulders. They knew what was afoot there. They knew that the North Vietnamese had been cheated out of a promise of free elections in 54, where there would be, a reunification of the country. They knew that the U.S. had supported the French and that the French couldn't prevail. And that if the French couldn't prevail with 500,000 troops, it was very unlikely that we could. But all the reports we sent downtown never got much of a hearing. And when a very close colleague of mine found out that the U.S. Army was deliberately falsifying figures on enemy strength, that General Westmoreland had put an artificial cap on how many enemy we could carry on our books. It was 208,000, no more, okay? And my friend found out that there were 500,000 Vietnamese communists under arms. Then it really hit the fan because we forced the issue, and we wrote a national intelligence estimate just of the kind as I described before, and brought it up to the director and said, look, the Army is not going to go along with this. This, we're talking now the fall of 1967. And the Army's not going to go along with this because Westmoreland has put this artificial cap on the number of enemy we can admit to, but we think it's this. Now, the rest of the story is pretty sad, Charlie, because Director Helms, in his great, quote, wisdom, end quote, turned the estimate back, turned it around, and went with the Army falsified figures. Why? Well, the way he explained to us, he says, well, you know, there's a war going on, and the last thing we want to do is to get in a little match, a little conflict with the U.S. Army. We were in high dudgeon. And finally, Tet happened just a couple months later. Tet was the major countrywide offensive by North Vietnamese and South Vietnamese communist forces. And there had to be 500,000 of them because they couldn't have done what they did without that. And so then it finally broke. That's when LBJ threw in the towel, went to negotiations, and decided not to run again for office. So there's a good story there that we knew what was going on. The bad story is that Richard Helms, the head of the CIA at that time, thought that his job was to protect the agency, as he put it, rather than tell the truth. And as a result of that, of course, a lot more U.S. forces got killed. So it's one of those mixed bags. We tried to tell the truth. We knew what the situation was. But unless our director, just like George Tenet, the director, mm-hmm. unless they're willing to speak truth to power, the hell with what happens to the agency. People get killed every day. Unless that happens, much of your work can be in vain.
Yeah, this is why I always say, you know, as long as you've got control at the top, everybody else, either by choice or, you know, drudgingly or willingly, is pretty much forced, unless they just leave, to go along with what's...
Yeah, you know, I had sort of given up on the CIA, but, you know, let me give you some reasons for hope. There have been three estimates put out over the last 2 years that, by golly, seem to be honest estimates. The first one had to do with Iran. How soon could Iran get a nuclear weapon? Dick Cheney was saying, like, tomorrow or next year. Well, the estimate says not until early to mid next decade, okay? So that's a lot more years, okay? Honest estimate at a time when Cheney's pushing for much more concerted action. Number two, an estimate done last April on the insurgencies in the world, what has happened to terrorism over the last couple of years. Main judgment? Terrorism has increased by a geometric factor. Main reason, the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Gutsy conclusion, not at all what Dick Cheney or George Bush wanted to hear, another honest estimate. And finally, the one that was put out in January, which said Iraq is headed for hell in a handbasket. There is no justification in that estimate for a surge or anything of that kind. There's no indication at all that a surge would help, would reverse the situation or even attenuate it. And so another gutsy estimate. Now, what did the president do? Well, he decided to surge before he allowed the estimate to be completed. So the estimates are out there. The good news is they appear to be honest estimates. Bad news is that the president decides on the basis of other factors, mainly Dick Cheney. One last point here. There is an estimate on Iranian attempts to acquire nuclear weapons, topic A in this town at this point, okay? It was supposed to have been produced last February, okay, then March, April. It's supposed to be put out now in June. Let's see if it is, and let's see if some patriotic truth teller has the courage to give it to the Post or to the New York Times, because that's the only way we learn about these things. But if it says that Iran is no closer to a nuclear weapon this year than it was 2 years ago, well, it's going to be harder for Dick Cheney to say that we need to obliterate Iran or its nuclear-related facilities.
Not going to be able to pull it off so easily. You know, I think of pre-9/11 intelligence, too. You had a lot of CIA and FBI agents coming forward and saying, yeah, look, we've got, you know, this very clear indication of an attack coming, and a lot of them were fired. They were told to shut up. You know, Bush, I'm sure you heard of Executive Order W199I, where he forbade the continuance of a bin Laden investigation that the CIA had been conducting going back to Clinton's days. He ordered it discontinued.
Yeah, the thing that bothers me most about the 9/11 situation is Dick Cheney's role, because that is the only palpable evidence that I have that is extremely, extremely troubling.
The stand-down thing, you mean?
Yeah, I refer specifically to Secretary of Transportation, former Secretary of Transportation Mineta's testimony, where he reports that that young fellow comes in and says, Mr. Vice President, the plane is 50 miles out now, same orders? And Cheney says, yes. A little while later, it's only 30 miles out now, Mr. Vice President, same orders? Yes, same orders. A little while later, 10 miles out now, same orders. And Cheney turns around, did anybody tell you to change the orders? No. Okay, same orders. 10 minutes later, plane hits the Pentagon. Now, that is really telling, because we have on tape Mineta's testimony to the Keene-Hamilton Commission. And Hamilton tries to lead him away from the Pentagon. He says, now, that plane you're referring to, was that... And he says, no, it was the Pentagon. And then they go off to talk about Pennsylvania and so forth. I had a chance to talk to Mineta one-on-one September of last year. Yeah, he and I were reading portions of the Constitution for Constitution Day at Georgetown University. I had Amendment 9 or so, and he had Amendment 15. So I found out where the people who were finished reading exited, and I positioned myself down there, empty hall. Here he comes, Mineta, with a collegian sort of escorting him. So I go up to him and I say, Secretary Mineta, how good to see you, you know. And he's a politician, you know. He says, oh, and I said, Ray McGovern. He says, oh, Ray, how good to see you. He didn't know me from Adam, see. So I stopped him, and for 10 minutes I said to him, you know, Secretary Mineta, there are all these theories going out there about what you said, what you reported about Cheney. Now, who is that young man? Do you know who the young man was? He says, no, I don't know who he was. I said, well, did he have a uniform on? No, he didn't have a uniform on. Well, have you ever thought to inquire? No. And I said, well, you know, how do you figure 50 miles, 30 miles, 10 miles, and then 10 minutes later crash into the Pentagon? He says, well, you know that plane in Pennsylvania, and there were the shoot-down orders. No. I'm saying, no, that was an hour later, Secretary Mineta. I'm talking about the plane that you said before that we went to the Pentagon. Remember, 77. Well, you know, we thought the Pennsylvania... So, you know, either the guy has Alzheimer's now, or he's been told by the White House, look, every time somebody asks you about this, talk about Pennsylvania. So that stinks to high heaven, and I
Well, I mean, he was asked by Hamilton, who was questioning him, to confirm. This is the plane that went into the Pentagon? He said, yes, sir.
Yeah.
He confirmed that's what it was.
That's enough for me, you know? And so what was it? Could it have been a shoot-down order? Well, no plane was shot down. There weren't any fighters anywhere near the plane that went into the Pentagon. It had to be, in my view, a stand-down order.
Sure, yeah. There's been a ton of backtracking, you know, statements that were initially made and then people changing their mind mysteriously.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, you won't find any of this in the 9/11 Commission report.
No.
Very curious. Huh? Very curious. So.
Well, it reminds me of the Warren report. A lot of suspicions there. You know, the people came forward and said, hey, I never made that statement.
Right.
And when I did make my statement, there was no Notre Republic present, yet there's the stamp, you know.
Yeah. And still people sort of talk disparagingly of so-called conspiracy theorists. Well, my hat's off to conspiracy theorists, because the main conspiracy is the one presented in the 9/11 Commission report. That's the official conspiracy.
Exactly.
And people trying to get beneath that, I applaud. And there are a lot of...
Well, you know, Bush picks all the Commission members, for crying out loud, when he's got the most guilty look on his face when it comes to... The evidence points to him more than Osama, for crying out loud.
Sure.
And then...
Well, yeah.
He didn't want the investigation.
Sure, he and Cheney picked the guy. They only let him do it when it became unavoidable, when the families were up in arms because of these other commissions. And, you know, if you look at the composition of that commission, Charlie, every one of them, every single one of the 10 was either a lawyer or a politician, and some of them were both.
Sure.
Now, I have nothing against lawyers and politicians, but that's representative of the American people. Give me one break. There wasn't one minority person on there. There was one token woman. That's not representative of us, and it's not representative of the people who perished on 9/11. And, you know, it just was an arch-establishment organization, even the Democrats. There was one Democrat on that commission that, forget his name now, the paraplegic Vietnam veteran guy, and he had to leave the commission because he was causing so much trouble. Because he wanted
Max Cleland.
Exactly, yeah.
I want to get him on, actually.
Oh, I'd love to ask him about his experience on the commission.
Sure.
Because it was very suspicious the way
his main disgust was that Bush personally wanted to and did censor what they looked at and didn't. And
exactly.
When they finally did get documents, the few they got, they were blacked out mostly.
And then do you remember when they wanted to talk to Bush and Cheney? And first says, no, we can't talk. And they said, oh, well, okay. But it has to be together. We have to be together, you know?
Right, and not on the phone, private, and they had all kinds
and
of
no stuff. Notes. Don't take any. Well, Zilikoff could take some notes, but he's got to leave them with us. Give me a break, you know? What does that suggest to you? Conspiracy,
and,
no?
And then Hamilton even said that everything went well. We didn't want to upset the president and ask him any politically charged questions in this election year.
Real bulldog.
Investigation. It's crazy.
Real bulldog,
Yeah, your opinion on E. Howard Hunt, you know, the latest tape that came out, what do you think of that?
In what respect? I'm not sure I'm up on that story.
Okay, he gave a tape to his son, St. John, and he asked him to release it after his death. He made the recording, I don't know, a couple years ago, and so he's recently come out with it now, and on the tape he states that it was certain elements within the CIA that were behind the Kennedy assassination.
Wow. Yeah, I'd just be whistling in the wind on that one, Charlie. I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, well, naturally, if that was the case, everything's so compartmentalized, I'm sure only certain few in the know would have been privy to that. I was just curious if you had heard about it. The other thing I wanted to ask you is the USS Liberty, seeing that you were in intelligence back then at that time, did you ever hear any whispers of, you know, any background behind-the-scenes information on that? Or...
Well, you know, Charlie, this is a very, very important issue, the USS Liberty. And for your listeners, in case they don't know, this is when the State of Israel deliberately tried to sink a USS Liberty, which was an intelligence collection ship, in international waters on the, the 8th of June, 1967, during the war. Why were they trying to do that? That's the interesting question. The answer lies in what now is available from NSA intercepts and from other reports, including Israeli journalists on the scene. And this is why they tried to sink the ship. Israelis had captured many Egyptian military as they came through the Sinai. That is, the Israeli three-pronged offensive into the Sinai starting on the 5th of June, 1967. They had rounded up about 300 Egyptian prisoners, and they were getting to be a big burden. They didn't know what to do with them. Well, 100 of them ended up in a little place called Al-Arish, which is right on the Mediterranean there in the Sinai. And according to Israeli journalists on the scene, these Egyptians were forced to dig their own graves. They were shot and buried there. And then they looked out on the horizon, and there was this big, towering, antenna-laden U.S. warship. And that had been reconnoitered that morning. Before you knew it, there were fighter bombers and torpedo ships, and for the next 2 hours, the Israelis did their best to sink the ship until they got word that the 6th Fleet had sent, or 7th Fleet, no, 6th Fleet had sent warplanes to do battle with them, and the battle
stopped. Tell you what, Ray, let's we'll pick it up right from there when we get back.
Okay.
Stick with us, folks.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
Hey, folks, we're back. Got a few more minutes left with our guest, Ray McGovern. In the last few minutes, we have, Mr. McGovern, if you can finish up what you were saying, the USS Liberty. I wanted specifically to ask you if you could elaborate on why
Sure.
you think the United States covered that up, because they did.
Yeah.
And what would the motive be? And do you think the Israel has had this powerful control, which they obviously have now, even way back then?
Yeah. Well, when we left our story here, we had said that the Israelis finally relented after 2 hours, couldn't sink it. They shot the lifeboats full of holes and killed 34 of our sailors, wounded 171. Now, the commander of the 6th Fleet dispatched our own fighter bombers there, but LBJ called them back. He spoke directly to the admiral and said, "We're not going to criticize our ally Israel," okay, even though he knew it was a deliberate attack. The sailors were told not to breathe a word of this, namely that it was a deliberate attack by Israel, to anyone, and the Congress and everyone else covered it up. The commander, who limped the ship back to an island in the Mediterranean, was given the Medal of Honor. But before doing that, our State Department went to the Israeli embassy and asked them if they would be offended if we gave the commander of that ship a Medal of Honor. They said, "No, go ahead." And they gave them the Medal of Honor, but not in the Oval Office, at the Washington Navy Yard, right aside the putrid Anacostia River, under cover of darkness. So that's how bad it is. And the survivors now are getting organized. And guess what the Israeli government is calling them? Anti-Semitic. I can't believe it. Well, what's the bottom line here? The bottom line here for me is that at that point in time, on the 8th of June and sequel, and the following days, Israel learned that it could literally get away with murder, and the United States would not rise to the occasion and call them on it. It would not criticize them, but rather would cover up the whole thing. And the Navy lawyer, who was asked to prove that this was an accident, even though he knew it wasn't, he's nearing his death, and he's now confessed that he participated in this cover-up. So it's very, very clear. The bottom line is that at least as early as then, the State of Israel realized that they had such a hold on our American government that they could pretty much do what they damn well pleased, including killing 34 of our sailors and wounding 171 others.
You know, it's got to be much more than just the generous IPAC donations. What kind of a hold do you think it is? I mean, they obviously, you know, the Zionists, let's call them by their proper name, they own a great deal of our media, they own a lot of our businesses. But even that, I don't think even that's enough leverage. What hold is it they could possibly have? Do you think that they're blackmailing our politicians with
something? Well, I think, it's money is speaks volumes, of course, but it's the media, I think, is mostly. I was speaking in Springfield, Missouri in October of last year, okay? And I was asked about the Mearsheimer and Waltz study on the Israel lobby. And I said that one of the most striking things of that whole study was that it didn't even mention what I consider to be the most poignant and the most striking feature of this relationship, and that is the USS Liberty. There were 300 people there, Charlie. I said, "How many people know about the USS Liberty?" 3 people raised their hand, okay?
Wow.
I call on the guy nearest me. I says, "Sir, how did you learn?" Guy stands up, ramrod straight. "My name is Lockwood. I was a U.S. Marine, served on the USS Liberty, sir."
Wow.
And I said, "Would you come up and tell the story?" And he says, "Sir, I've been reluctant. I've been wanting to deal with this for the last 40 years, but I think I could try now." And he came up, and for the next 10 minutes, he gave an incredibly firsthand, poignant account of exactly what happened.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I wish we had more time to talk about this, but I want to thank you for coming on and spending the time with us, sir. It's been a very interesting interview, and maybe I can have you on some other time.
You're welcome, Charlie. Good luck.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. You take care. Folks, we'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth.